So episode 100, you'd think we would have thought of something more grandiose to do, like having 100 people on here giving us verbal testimonials.
That sounds grandiose. What's more important than talking about money, honey?
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families. This is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode. So over the past almost 2 years, we've been doing the podcast because we do it weekly, and we're up to episode 100. You know, we've made our way to where we have thousands of unique downloads per episode, tens of thousands of unique downloads per month. We have 42 worldwide iTunes reviews, all 5-star. We have folks who are helping support us via Patreon at supportzenfounder.com. And we really want to take this time to thank you, our listener, because without these numbers going up and to the right, people stop doing podcasts. You kind of lose the motivation to do it. And every week, as we see the download numbers increase and we see new iTunes reviews come, we see the money coming through to support the show, it feels great. And we really, you know, we want to thank you as a listener, and we just look forward to continuing to kind of travel this journey that we've traveled over the past couple of years.
So as we mentioned at the beginning, our conversation topic today is about money, about dollars. And we have been revisiting this part of our life with the new year, both in terms of thinking about our own family budget and our business budgets and sort of what we want to accomplish financially this year. But the focus of this conversation is how to talk to kids about money, because our kids are 10 and 6 and they want stuff, believe me. So we've had lots of conversations lately, especially around the holidays, around sort of resources and how to use them, how to save them, sort of what's a valuable expenditure when you have limited resources. And so it's really inspired us to think carefully about how we're getting our kids ready for money management as adults by getting them started now.
Yeah. And so every once in a while, I'll come across a book that is, you know, about how do you talk to kids about money and stuff like that. And some of them have been good. Some of them have been not so good. But one that I read recently that I was pretty taken by, I felt like it did a really good job of helping me rethink the way that I view how our kids spend money. It's called The 5 Money Conversations You Should Have With Your Kids at Every Age and Every Stage. And I got it in audio format, but it's available in Kindle and physical. And we'll link up the Amazon link in the show notes. But the idea and what I liked about this book is I've heard in the past, you know, allowance versus no allowance, chores versus no chores, how to teach them about investing, how to teach them the values and such. But what I liked about this one is that the co-authors have already written a book for married couples about figuring out your own personality type, your spouse's, and then, you know, figuring out your compatibilities and incompatibilities and how, you know, working together, you can figure out how to surmount those, because money obviously is such a big deal in a marriage. And they adapted that for kids. And so they have these 5 money personality types that they define in the book. And to be perfectly honest, you know, I did not dig into their backgrounds and look at how much scientific evidence there is, because they have a whole test you can take and get the personality types, which we had our kids take, and you and I both take them as well. Whether the stuff is valid or not, the themes they chose and kind of the personality types they have, they really resonate with me. And it made me better able to kind of categorize how our two boys think so differently about money. And once they took these tests and it matched up with their personalities, it was like, oh yeah, this is, you know, there's something here.
I mean, scientifically valid or not, it sounds like it was really useful to you. So any tool that gives you better language or helps you to categorize information in such a way that it makes it easier to talk about a pretty complicated, nuanced topic, then I think that's a really, you know, it's a useful tool. So we don't have to worry too much about the scientific validity. I don't think we can just use it as something that's helpful and meaningful to you.
And so these five personality types, the first one is a saver. And I think it's kind of self-explanatory. Someone who tends to feel better when they're saving money for a rainy day and they look at the future and they think down the line. Second one is a spender. So it's kind of the opposite. It's people who tend to spend money, don't tend to think about savings, tend to get joy out of spending and getting something for that. And the third is a risk taker. And this is like an adventurer, a deal maker. These are idea people, tends to be more entrepreneurial type folks who are willing to take risks in order to get rewards, and they enjoy the thrill of that. The fourth is a security seeker. This one often overlaps. Oh, so I should take a step back and say that according to the book, each of us have a primary and a secondary. And so security seeker often overlaps with saver, because a security seeker is all about the future. They want clear expectations. You know, think about a child who wants to know everything that's going to happen over the next 8 hours. And then if that changes, it's uncertain and it makes them really concerned by that. They crave information. They understand delayed gratification. They're always prepared for things. They like the familiar, often indecisive when thinking about spending money because they don't want to make the wrong decision. And so that's a security seeker. And like I said, it can go hand in hand with saver. It doesn't have to. But in one of our sons, our six-year-old, it actually does.
And that is a really, really accurate description of his personality.
And that's what I liked about it. As I was reading it, as soon as they say, you know, indecisive, stressed out when they spend money, that was like a key point in the book, is that a security seeker is stressed out. And same with the saver. I thought, oh, that's why he says, I don't know. I don't know. You know, do you want to buy that? I don't know. You have the money. I don't know if I want to buy it. Should I buy it? Like, it really stresses him out even at six. And it's like, okay, now I get that. And so they give you some strategies for how to cope and how to help savers spend money on things that they really want and give them time to think about it in advance. You know, like, we're going to go to the store, think about whether or not you want to spend, and then don't stress about it. That's what I found was helpful.
And there's one more, right? The fifth one.
Fifth one is called a flyer. And no one in our family has this one, actually. But a flyer is where money is all about relationships. They're comfortable with last minute changes, very flexible. They value time with friends the most. And they can tend to look flaky in terms of money. They have no interest in money, just the means that it, how they interact with friends. And so they were talking about how, like, flyers will often treat all their friends, their buddies, to whatever it is, sodas after school or something, and they blow a bunch of money. And if you know, as a parent, you might be thinking, oh my gosh, this is not, like, they're getting taken advantage of. This is terrible. That can be part of both a child and a, you know, an adult's kind of money personality. And so we actually spoke with both of our kids about the personality types. Like I said, all four of us took the money personality quiz, and I talked to both our six-year-old and our 10-year-old about it. So let's hear what they have to say about their own money personality types. How old are you?
Six, almost seven.
So I wanted to talk to you today about money. Do you remember how you and I took a test on the computer a couple weeks ago and we figured out your money personality?
Yeah.
Do you remember what your personalities were? There was a primary and a secondary.
Yeah.
What were they? You don't know. So the first one was, the primary was called security seeker.
Yeah.
And that means that you kind of like to think long term and really think hard about your decisions. And the secondary was a saver. And that means it's someone who prefers to save money rather than spend money, because you often have big things that you want to buy later and you feel like you don't want to make the wrong decision with your spending. Does that sound accurate? Does that sound about what you think your own money personalities are?
Yeah.
How does it make you feel when you spend money to buy something?
I don't really know.
Does it ever make you, do you ever stress out over the decision of what to buy or how much to spend?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah? That's kind of your thing, huh?
Yeah.
We'll be in a store and you'll say, I don't know. I don't know if I should buy this.
Yeah, I'll be like that.
Say hi.
Hi.
How old are you?
I am 10 years old. 10 and a half, actually.
So I want to talk to you today about money. Do you remember the money personality test that we took?
Yeah.
Or I guess you took it on your own a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, and it came out as risk taker spender.
Risk taker spender. So did you know that you're the exact opposite of your brother?
Yeah, polar opposites.
Yeah, he's a security seeker saver, which is funny. So do you remember what risk taker means?
Entrepreneur.
Entrepreneurial,
because that's what you. Because they make businesses and they take a risk, like they spend some money to start a business, and if it doesn't go well for them, they could lose money. So that's what a risk taker is.
Right. Yeah. Risk takers, they kind of, their personality seeks adventure. They're deal makers. They're idea people.
Yeah.
And so entrepreneurs fit into that. You could also, I mean, you don't have to be an entrepreneur to be kind of a money risk taker. But in your case, I think you probably are. And then say, spender is your secondary money personality. What do you think a spender does?
Spends a lot of money. Like, there's a hole in the pocket. He or she likes to spend money a lot.
Yeah, and you don't have to fit into that, but spenders don't feel bad about spending money, and they do like coming home from the store with something, right? It makes them feel good to get something when they're out or when they're, I don't know, shopping and such. Whereas savers, it tends to stress them out to spend money. And so you've heard about our kids. Now let's take a look at each of our money personality types. So Sherry, your primary money personality is a saver, and your second is security seeker.
That sounds right.
Does it? Why do you say that?
Because I think that I would just much rather have like money in a bank account that I can look at and see than spend it toward like relationships or being a high flyer, or like there's something that is very comforting to me about the certainty of what I know that I have. And I think in that way, I'm fairly risk averse.
Yeah. And that, right. Because like in terms of stock investments and risking money in order to make money, that is not something that comes naturally to you at all.
No, not at all. And I don't know if that's part of being brought up in a family where resources were very, very limited. And so there was a really strong orientation toward kind of not knowing when the next crisis was going to happen and trying to be ready for it, or if that's just more deeply seated within my personality, that's not necessarily a product of being nurtured in that kind of environment.
Right. Well, now if someone knows you today, I mean, both you and I, we live very differently than we did growing up. Both of us came from limited means, I'll say. And, you know, if you were to hang out with us for a few weeks here, you'd see us hiring babysitters, going out to dinner, and not necessarily worrying about the cost of the food we're eating or the cost of the show that we're going to. And, you know, both of us value like good quality stuff, something we didn't have when we were young. So how do you reconcile that now with being a saver, security seeker in terms of having much more freedom to spend money?
I think it's all relative. I mean, yes, we'll go out to a nice show and a nice dinner once, maybe twice a month. We actually aren't people who spend a lot of money on entertainment. I think relative to the amount of money in the bank account, the expenditures that we have are, you know, at least for like recreational kinds of things, are relatively small.
Yeah, it's funny. There's that phrase, living within your means. And over time, our means have gotten larger and larger, you know, and so we're able to perhaps be a bit more extravagant. It's not the right word, because it's not like we're going buying gold bottles of champagne at places, but we do go to nice restaurants and don't think twice about going to a nice restaurant and ordering what you want on the menu. And it's because within our means it's changed, right, over the past 10, 20, 30 years.
Right. It's still not spending in a way that's risky. There's still a big giant cushion between zero in the bank account and those expenses.
Right. Whereas back in the day, it was a $6 sandwich at Subway could put you towards the brink. I know from firsthand. And then my money personality is, my primary is risk taker, which is more the entrepreneurial. So that makes sense. And my secondary is a saver, which makes a lot of sense. I actually feel like I'm kind of a security seeker as well, because the reason that I became entrepreneurial was not because I really wanted to start stuff. It's because I wanted the security of having like income or having more money. I saw that money brought security in a certain sense. And that was why I really started businesses.
You wanted to get more money faster.
Yeah.
To have more security.
I know, which maybe is the definition of a risk taker. Is that right? It's funny. They all tie together in me, I think.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I think you have a very robust and mature, I think, way of thinking about money and handling money. And so I think all of these components are here within you to some extent.
And I think one of the things that is so good about our relationship is that although, you know, I have that risk taker thing, so I like to start businesses, which, you know, often bring in more money, but I also like to save that money. And left to my own devices, I would just amass a bunch of money in a bank account. And you bring the side of, let's use that to experience things. And let's use that to travel and to see people and to go to shows and to do that. And I would do that very, very rarely because I have that saver component, whereas you have the experiential component that, that really isn't taken into account by these money personalities. You know, you do value experience over just amassing money in the bank. And I feel like we do a good job of allowing each other to balance each other out in that if I say, look, there's a money problem, we need to back off, you're like, boom, done. And if you say, look, we need to travel, and I look in the bank account and I'm comfortable with spending, you know, a couple grand to take a trip, boom, done. Like, we don't fight each other for fighter's sake. Like, we only raise red flags when there truly are red flags. Like, we haven't traveled in a while and things are going to implode. Or we, you know, don't have enough money in the bank account and things are going to implode.
Yeah, I think considering how tricky finances can be for lots of couples, I think we've done pretty well and gotten off pretty easy in that, you know, we both have clear orientations and clear personalities when it comes to money. But there's also a level of flexibility where, you know, I have no issues with the risks that you take or your risk taker personality, because I, first of all, I trust that that little pile of security money will be in that savings account somewhere. And that's never wavered. And so once that's there, all the rest is kind of play money in a way. Like, it's fine with me for there to be lots of risk taking or spending to some extent. I also think that we are okay to spend money, but have similar values around how and how much and when and why we do that. So we don't have necessarily a lot of tension or contention about how money is spent.
Right. It's funny because you'll get a package from, what is it, a Latote or Anthropology or ThreadUp. And you're always quick to point out, like, look at this amazing thing I got for 50% off, you know, or I got these new shoes and they're hundreds of dollars off. Like, if you ever actually came home with a several hundred dollar handbag that you paid full price for, my jaw would drop. Right?
Because it would be so out of character for me.
Yep. You just don't do it. Yeah. You've always bought at a discount. You had, I don't remember, it was a sweater or a shirt you used to wear when we were dating that you got for 10 cents at a Tuesday thrift store sale.
Tuesday, yeah, the thrift store, yeah.
You were super proud of that. And now that 10 cents is maybe, you know, a few orders of magnitude larger, but it's about getting a deal for you. And now it's about, like, I want something quality and I'm not paying full price for it.
Yeah, there's nothing like getting a pair of, like, beautiful Italian leather shoes for $40 or $50, in my opinion. So coming back to the topic of talking with kids about money, it sounds like it was really helpful for you to think through the kids' personalities and to talk with them about it. But one of the conversation points that we have been batting around for the last couple of months really is sort of allowance versus no allowance. And we've talked about this on the podcast before, but one of the things that I really like about a more entrepreneurial mindset is really equipping kids to have creative ways of earning money or making money that are not allowance based. So they kind of have to do something for the money, or they have to be creative in some way or sell something or basically hustle a little bit. And that's been a model that's worked well, particularly for our oldest son when he wrote a book when he was 8, and he still has sort of revenue coming in from that book. And we've also encouraged our kids to just get creative in different ways, whether it's selling their services as musicians or doing chores for us or for people around the neighborhood, basically like making a deal and having conversations with people about money and how to get money and believing that they have valuable services and things that they can do. And that's kind of the best framework for them to begin thinking about how money comes into their lives.
Right. And for a long time, we have done no allowance. And the reason behind that was to try to teach our kids, if you're going to make money, you need to be entrepreneurial. That was a justification. And it hasn't worked out the way I had hoped. You know, I think you and I both wanted them to do more entrepreneurial things. And for whatever reason it is, you know, they just haven't done it. We've encouraged them, we've given them ideas, and they haven't taken it by the horns and pushed it along. And it's a bit too much to expect from a 6 and a 10-year-old, especially having moved in the middle of the year. So we don't have the network that we used to have. You know, oftentimes if you're going to be entrepreneurial, you might want to make Christmas cards, was one example we gave to them. And we don't really have a network here, so it would all be remote. And just different things have popped up. So we've recently kind of reopened that discussion of allowance versus no allowance. And in listening to 2 or 3 different books, on some were just about investing and family finance, and then, you know, this book about 5 money conversations, they all said allowance is a good thing because it teaches, there's very specific things that it teaches kids. And one of the things I did take away from those books is several of them said, you know, don't make it based on chores. It's not about work being done, that the work being done is just part of the family, right? If you're going to be part of this family, you're going to empty the dishwasher, you're going to put away your own clothes and that kind of stuff. But really make the allowance a teaching tool that stands separate from all of that.
I really like that. I think that's been really important. I don't want to nickel and dime with the kids or negotiate with the kids around being good, like, citizens in our household. I want them to be people who see that there are things that need to be done and do them. And of course, that's every mother's dream, but they will put the dishes away. They do have a set list of things that are part of their routine that they contribute to the household and are acts that sort of help them to take care of themselves and their things. And I don't like the idea of paying them for that. I feel like that's just like part of life and you just have to do that.
Right. And if we find that the allowance experiment does not work out and suddenly we're like, you know what, guys, we're not going to do allowance anymore, they're going to be disappointed. But we don't suddenly want them to think, oh, now I don't have to do anything around here. Right. They really are. I don't think they should coincide because of all those reasons.
Yeah. Not if they want to eat here.
Yep. I agree. So let's listen in on the conversations I had with our 6 and our 10-year-olds about the specifics of allowance. Your mom and I have decided that we're going to start giving you and your brother a monthly allowance.
Wait, monthly? What's monthly?
Every month. Once a month, you'll get it.
How much money will I get?
So we've decided to give you and your brother $15 a month each.
For doing stuff like chores and stuff?
Well, see, doing chores is part of just part of being in the family, right? That's just part of every day, putting dishes away. We all are doing work and doing laundry and stuff. This money is actually to teach you something. It's to teach you how to budget. It's to teach you how to save. And it's to teach you how to make some money last and not spend it all right away.
Oh.
Or to be mindful about the things that you do spend it on, so that if you decide you want a big Lego set, that maybe you save up for a couple months and maybe you even do, you know, some entrepreneurial things like writing a book like your brother did, or raking leaves or shoveling snow in order to earn more money and get to that Lego pack faster. Yeah.
Well, I've been wanting a Lego set and it's about $100. So how much? I already have like 24. So how much will I need? How much months will it take until I can get that?
Well, if you already have 24 and you need 100, that means you need about $76. And that's about 5 months if you saved all of your money. But what I think is that if you want to get to that Lego set faster, that we can talk about some of these more entrepreneurial things you can do, like making Valentine's Day cards and selling them.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, so that's, I think, a good way to do it, because you can make $5, $10, $15 just doing one of these little entrepreneurial projects.
Yeah, I probably could.
Yeah. So your mom and I also want to match every dollar that you save.
What's that?
That means that if you decide that of your $15 that you want to save it for a while and not spend it, we will actually also give you $15, another $15 to match it. Or if you decided that you want to spend 10 of your dollars and you want to save 5, that we will do a dollar for dollar match of that $5. So that means if you put in 5 into your, we're going to set up a little savings account for you. And if you put in $5 and leave it there, we will put 5 in as well. So realistically, if you were to decide to save it all, you could actually make, have more money in that account. And the reason we're doing that is we want to encourage you and your brother both to think about saving a portion of your money.
Yeah, I want to save like a few $15 because that'll probably take a little bit of a long time to get $100 from like a 24 head start.
Yep. And then the other thing is we want to encourage you to give some of your money away and to help people. So we're going to talk about taking about 10% of your money, which is about $1.50 each month, and figuring out if there's a cause or some people or some type of charity that might need it in order to help others. How's all that sound? Does it sound fun, complicated, stressful?
Stressful at the end.
Why, the giving?
Yeah.
You don't like that part?
I don't like giving or sharing anything.
You don't like giving or sharing? Why not?
I don't know. I just don't.
It makes you feel stressed out to have to give some of your money away?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we can talk more about that. This is not, you know, giving is not something that you should be forced to do because it's just going to make you resent it. So we will talk more in depth about why your mom and I give and why other people give in order to help those around them. Your mom and I want to start teaching you guys a little more about money, and we want to do it by giving you each a monthly allowance of $15. And the idea behind that is to teach you to kind of budget and use that money over the course of, say, an entire month to get what you want. And that if you want extra money, that you would do some of the entrepreneurial things we've talked about, like writing another book, making, you know, and selling cards. You've talked about doing a YouTube channel and trying to make money on ads. There's a whole bunch of ways. Yeah. You talked about making a simple video game, a whole bunch of ways where you could do it. So if you want something that's more than $15, obviously you either have to save up over the course of months or you'll have to earn more money. And in addition, we want to encourage you to save. So we want to offer you guys each, basically it's a dollar for dollar match, that if you put money in a savings account, that we will match 100% of that. So it's a big, you know, it's a big commitment from us to do that.
What is that supposed to mean?
So like, if you were to take your $15 and take five of it and put it into a savings account and you're not going to touch it for a while, we'll put another $5 in. So you'll actually, right, you'll net.
$10? So
yeah,
it's sort of like teaching me how the bank gives you like
interest, yeah.
1.5% right. of the money you have in the bank.
Right, except we're gonna do a lot more than that, right? Because the bank gives you like 1% over the course of
yeah,
the year.
Yeah, but you're doing like times two or 100%.
Right, because we want to encourage you guys, especially you, since you naturally, you know, you have the inclination to be more of a spender, we want to encourage you to save money for longer term goals. And whether that money is for your entrepreneurial endeavors, maybe to fund your next book on your own, or if it's to save up for, you know, a larger Lego set or a big video game or something that you may not have the immediate money for, we want to encourage you to do that.
So you're saying that every month you will match what I have in a savings account dollar for dollar?
Yeah, we will match what you contribute that month to the savings account. Does that make sense? So if you had $100 in the savings account at the start of the month, you add $5, we're going to add $5 too. So you'll have $110. And then the next month it would be the same.
Oh.
And frankly, any money you put into a savings account that you're going to not touch for a while, I'd be willing to match that.
Okay.
All right. Any questions?
No, not really.
How does this sound?
Good.
Do you think it's going to be, you think you're going to learn something from this? Kind of getting a little bit of money at the beginning of each month and having to kind of think through scheme, plan. Am I going to invest it in something to grow it? Am I going to spend it? Am I going to save something? I was actually thinking about, there are a couple companies that you might know about, you and your brother, but like you can buy one share of Disney and they make Pixar, right? And we've been to Disneyland and Disney World. So we can talk about that. You'd actually have to save up for that.
I just realized that monthly allowance is like sort of teaching me about payday.
That's exactly what it's teaching about. Yep. Disney stock is at like $108. So it might take a while to save.
$109 because it's $108.98.
Right. And, maybe we would wait until there's a little bit of a downturn, but that could be an interesting adventure, is to own, you know, just a single stock and watch it over time. Well, cool. Thanks for the chat.
Bye.
So from those conversations, you can hear, you know, I was trying to communicate to the kids, like, there are some things that we want you to learn from this experience. And so let's maybe pull four, you know, I think there's kind of four main things that came out of those conversations. So let's talk through those.
One of the first goals is to understand saving, understand delaying gratification, setting money aside so that you can either, you know, purchase something larger that you don't have enough money for today, right now. And so that the kids have a sense that those bigger dollar amounts do mean some power, they mean some security, and that saving both feels good and is kind of helpful in the long run.
Right. And that's why we offered to match their dollar for dollar, their savings. And everybody, you know, every adult out there knows that's a pretty generous offer, right? And I think over time we'll have to back that off, especially as they make more money. But we want to especially encourage our older son, who is that risk taker spender, to think more deliberately about saving. And then we want to encourage our 6-year-old, who, although he is a security seeker saver, we want him to think long term, because as a 6-year-old, like 4 or 5 months, that's a tremendous amount of time tremendous amount of time to think about saving for something. And so if we can help him feel better about that and shorten that a little bit, even as he saves for something large, because the pride that he's going to have when he walks into that store and buys it with his own money, it's going to be huge.
So after saving, the second big learning objective is budgeting, having a sense of how much money is available and allocating money in a way that makes sure that you have enough to cover your expenses, basically, even if your expenses happen to be like big lollipops and small Lego sets.
Right. And the idea here is it kind of makes it easier for us now to say, look, when we're at a store and they want to buy something, we say, do you have the money? If you do, do you want to spend it? And if you don't, add it to your wish list, you know, and then your wish list allows them to either save up for it or ask for it at a, you know, at a birthday or a Christmas or some other event. So I like this idea of the kids kind of having more at this age, starting to have more control over it rather than us every time having to make a decision, having to make a conversation. Well, should I buy this for them? I mean, it just getting away from that, I think, is a good thing at this point.
And thirdly, don't worry, we're not giving up on our dream of entrepreneurship in the kids. I think one of the things that having this set amount of money each month might spark, we'll see, is that, you know, I think once you have some spending money and money available, you might want more. And I think that leads to this natural progression of, okay, well, how do I get more money or the most amount of money for fairly minimal effort or limited output? And I think this leads to those entrepreneurial questions of, is it time to write another book? Is it time to get some little neighborhood service going on? And, you know, we're hoping that, again, having a sense of their own money will spark some creativity and some entrepreneurial motivation.
Yep, I agree. I mean, you know, honestly, $15 a month isn't a ton of money. You know, the kids like Lego sets and they're expensive and just a lot of stuff, even little iOS apps that they like to buy new games and such. And they're going to have to figure out ways to make more money. You know, $15 a month is not going to be as much as they will probably want to spend. And so I'm hoping that is a good teaching experience in terms of encouraging them towards entrepreneurship. And I think the fourth learning goal, and I brought this up briefly with our 10-year-old, not necessarily our 6-year-old at this point, is the potential of investing. Because this is something I got into pretty early on. I read some books when I was between 10 and 12, and I think I bought my first share of stock when I was around 12, 13 years old. And again, this was the risk taker saver in me, because I saw that the risk taker was willing to invest a little bit of money in a company with the idea that if it made more money, I would save that money later. And so talking to our 10-year-old about, you know, buying one share of Disney or one share of TGT, which is Target, only because they sell Minecraft minifigures and he's fascinated with Target. Anytime we see one, we don't go out to retail much because we do so much Amazon stuff that, like, he's actually really fond of Target for some reason, even though we go there like 3 times a year. But I could see that being an interesting thing for him to buy. And then he owns one share, we could get the stock certificate and we could talk through. He already knows what a share of stock is versus a bond, how one's an ownership and one's a loan. But it'd be, you know, once your own money is in something, it's pretty interesting to see every month, you know, where it's up, where it's down. And the good thing about Disney and Target are that they both dividend paying stocks. And so they pay, let's just say, in the 3-4% annual return on your money. And so there's obviously always risk of it going down in terms of the stock price. But if you own a share of Disney and then you're getting $4 a year, $5 a year, because it's about $100 for a share of Disney. And then you watch that stock go up or you watch it go down, you just learn a little bit about investing. They don't tend to be such volatile stocks that he's going to lose all of his money. But I think that whole conversation is interesting. And I don't know if the kids are going to be comfortable with investing. I don't know if, you know, especially our younger one, if it's just going to be too stressful for him. It's something I'll probably bring up in a few years. But I do think our older son is probably more ready to start thinking about, you know, putting a tiny amount in and just to learn about what it feels like to actually put some money on the table and look at getting a little bit of a return.
Well, overall, this book, The 5 Money Conversations You Should Have With Your Kids at Every Age and Stage, it sounds like was a really important read for you, Rob, over the last month or so. And you read it. I actually haven't read it yet, but I think the conversations that you've had with both of the kids and with me have been really important in terms of just getting everybody on the same page about how we're thinking about money at this point, and also creating opportunities for our kids to do some more hands-on learning with money and how to invest and save and also also understand their own sensibility as it comes to money.
Yep, I agree. I think learning their money personalities has been really helpful for both you and I. And I want to keep reflecting that back to the kids in terms of telling them when our oldest really wants to buy something in a store, being like, look, remember, this is who you are. And you need to kind of maybe curb that desire every time we walk in. And for the younger one to say, hey, don't stress out so much about it, to kind of encourage them to embrace more towards the middle rather than just be kind of being stuck in the, you know, in the mold that their mind tends to wander to.
Sounds good.
What y'all wanna do? Wanna be ballers, shot callers, brawlers, we'll be dipping in the